Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bechoros Daf Vav. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur begins three lines from the top of Daf Vav. In our previous Shiur, we saw a Tanaic source in which the issue of exemption from Peter Hamor, or more accurately, exemption from Kedushas Bechor, as regards all other unkosher variety animals other than a Hamor, is learned from the fact that the expression Peter Hamor appears twice in the Torah. The Torah is trying to make the point that only Peter Hamor, a donkey, which is an unkosher variety animal, has sanctity when it is a firstborn, but not firstborn horses nor camels. So, just to repeat that point, the exclusion from sanctity of all other unkosher variety animals is learned from the repetition of the expression Peter Hamor. Now, regarding this, Rav Achoy raises a question. You will notice through our Gemara markings that the question itself is a long question. You see a kuf that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a descending vertical dashed line, which indicates that all of the lines of Gemara that are opposite this marking constitute the question. In effect, he will raise the problem that the double comment or double phrase Peter Hamor, the repetition of Peter Hamor in the Torah, may very well have another role. And if that be the case, I won't necessarily exclude unkosher variety firstborn animals from firstborn sanctity from Kedushas Bechor. Now, we continue before we read the Gemara itself. We glance at the outside margin where we see a nosei comment, a topic heading, in our Gemara markings, Shas Ozer, the cornerstone of the Gemara marking system, the marked Gemara that you see on your screen. We feature topic headings that we call nosei and structural notes from time to time that are referred to by the expression mivneh. In this case, under our nosei heading, we have written Eich mochichim mehaposuk. How do we prove from the posuk de'ein din b'chor b'pitre susim v'gemalim, that there is no din of firstborn sanctity with regard to horses and camels, which are representative of all other unkosher variety animals. So the Gemara Poruch Rav Achoy. Rav Achoy raises a question. E kosav rachmona chad, had the Torah written only one time the expression Peter Hamor, have amina, I would have thought davar shehoya bichlal, that this was an example of something that was part of a general category, v'yotza min haklal l'lamed, and it left its general category to teach me, lo l'lamed al atzmo yotza, el l'lamed al haklal kulo yotza, but to shed light on the entire category. If we look in the Rashi, third line from the top, maskiflo rav acha, ho travayu tzrichi. In fact, I don't have an extra Peter Hamor. I will need both of them. De'i kosav chad, had the Torah written Peter Hamor only once, have amina, I would have thought, have Peter Hamor dover shehoya bechlal, bechor, habehemo, hatmea, tifteh. I would have thought that there is a general category that says firstborn unkosher variety animals must be redeemed insofar as that they are holy. The Yotzei Min HaKlal L'Lamed Rashi goes on, Shepidyonoi Beseh, and the Torah emphasized Petach Hamor to teach concerning its redemption through a sheep, that a sheep is set aside in exchange for the firstborn donkey, and the sheep is presented to a Kohen. Lo l'lamed al atzmo yotza, the citation of Petach Hamor isn't there to teach me about itself, elo l'lamed al haklal kulo yotza, but to shed light on the entire category, namely the entire category of unkosher variety firstborn animals, lo'ilam niftim b'seh, and that they are all redeemable through a sheep, the sheep being set aside in their stead and then given to a Kohen. That's what I would have thought had the Torah written Petach Hamor only once. So, Talmud Lomar Mikro Acher, I learned from a second Pasuk, Petach Hamor Tivdeh, Loimar Loch, Ze Beseh Velo Acher Beseh, that the provision for a sheep serving as redemption applies only to donkey, but not to all other unkosher variety firstborn. They are, in fact, holy, but their redemption is accomplished through other means. So the Gemara points out that had the Torah written only one Petach Hamor, I would have thought that Petach Hamor was something that left the klal, was taken out of the general category of unkosher variety firstborn animals that are holy, and it is featured to tell me about this special halacha concerning redemption through sheep. And the Gemara continues, ul'oilam b'seh, and in general, redemption could take place through a sheep. Kosav rachmona peter chamor achrino, therefore the Torah wrote peter chamor again, pitre chamorim velo pitre susim ugemalim, to inform me that only firstborn donkeys have this sheep provision, that you can redeem them through a sheep, which could be actually quite a bit cheaper in value, much lesser value than the firstborn donkey. The low pitre susim gemalim, but the sheep provision would not be applicable to horses and camel firstborn. The amal me'atinu miseh, and I would thereby conclude that they were excluded. The susim and gemalim, the horses and camels, were excluded from the sheep allowance ula'olam b'chol davar, and rather they are redeemed through all other things, all other methods. And we see, though, that they need redemption, just that they are not like the chamor, which is done through a sheep. They are done through all other methods. But what do you see? Bottom line is that they are holy. So, as far as Rav Achoy is concerned, as far as his question is concerned, the fact that the Torah writes Petach Hamor twice does not show an exclusion of Susim and Gemalim from Bechor sanctity. The Gemara answers, Im Kain, if that were true, that they are sanctified, that there is sanctity to firstborn horses and camels, Lichtav Rachmona, the Torah could have said, Petach Hamor Tifdeh Beseh, V'chamor Tifdeh Beseh. The reference to the Chamor twice would have been sufficient to tell me that point. Petach Hamor Tifdeh Beseh, Petach Hamor Tifdeh Beseh, that the entire phrase is repeated twice, not just the word Chamor. Lomali, why such heavy repetition, if you will? Why so many extra, why so much, so many words repeated? The answer is, Pitre chamorim omarti loch, velo pitre susim ugmalim. This makes the point that only firstborn donkeys are considered holy in the realm of unkosher variety animals, and not the firstborn of any other type of unkosher variety animal. V'tana didon, that already darshened petach hamor, limute susim ugmalim mino lei. Where is our Tana, which is stands in distinction to Rabbi Yossi Haglili? Where does he learn the exclusion of firstborn unkosher variety animals, exclusion from the realm of Kedusha? Omar of Papa, he, our Mishnah, our Tana, will learn that from Kol Miknicha Tizachar. Before we go further, we are citing a posuk in Shmos Perek Lamed Beis, Psukim Yutes and Chof. We have written these psukim on the side of the Gemara. You might notice the appearance of these psukim. We'll read them before going on into the Gemara. It says there, Kol Peter Rechem Li, V'chol Miknecho Tizachar, Peter Shor Vaseh, and the posuk Chof continues, U'Peter Chamor Tifteh Baseh, V'imlo Tifteh V'rafto, Kol B'chor Bonecho Tifteh, V'lo Yira'u Ponai Reikom. So you see in this pasuk a reference to the Peter Shor Vaseh and also Peter Chamor. So the pasuk says, "Kol Miknecha Tizachar." We turning back to the Gemara, Marav Papa, "Kol Miknecha Tizachar Klal." That represents a general statement. Shor Vaseh, the Chamor. You have in pasuk Yutes a reference to the cow, the ox, and the sheep, and in pasuk Chof a donkey. Prat. Those are specifics. Klal uprat, ein b'chlal u'mashe b'prat. When you have a scriptural structure like this, where you have a general followed by a specific, the rule is that the klal, the principle, will apply only to those things featured as specific examples. That's ein b'chlal u'mashe b'prat. And from this we learn shor v'sev v'chamor in. Those kind of animals have firstborn sanctity, midi achrino lo, but other things no. And we would thereby exclude horses and camels. Rabbi Yossi Haglili, who does not learn exclusion of horses and camels from this pasuk in Shmos Lamed Dalet, but rather learns it from the doubling of the Peter Chamor, he says, as far as this pasuk in Shmos Lamed Dalet, Peter hifsi koinyon. The word Peter in pasuk Chof does not, it interrupts the flow of specifics, Shor Vaseh, and hence I can't darshan this as a klal uprat, with the Chamor being part of the prat. Rabbanan, they say you can, because vav hada arvikra, the vav in the word upeter, that vav draws it back in. It makes it connected to shor v'seh. Rabbi Yossi Haglili says if you need the vav to draw it back in, because the word peter was a block, well then lo lichtoiv lo vav lo peter, then the Torah shouldn't have bothered writing the vav as well as the word Peter. V'rabonon, the Rabbonon who feel that it is a klalu prat, why is it that we have the vav and the word Peter? Aidi deha kedushas domi v'ha kedushas aguf, since the donkey represents something of monetary value, it's not of a sacrificial nature, whereas the shor and sev, the cow and sheep, are kedushas aguf. They have inherent kedusha. That means they themselves are offered as sacrifices. Pasuk luhu, you needed a word to serve as a block, as a to separate the two groups, the kedushas domen from kedushas aguf. V'hadar orev luhu, and you therefore need the vav to be able to draw it back in to this scheme of klal uprat. Before we continue in the Gemara, let us glance at the outside margin, at the Nosei Mivneh heading. You'll see that we have used a double underline with dots in it to highlight an expression, Pora Shiolda Min Chamor, a cow that gave birth to an offspring that looked like a donkey. Im yesh miktsas simonim ma'adino bevuchor. What happens when the offspring has some characteristics of the mother? In other words, it doesn't look totally different. We have already learned that if the animal, the offspring, looks totally different from the mother, then there will be no kedushas bechor. What happens if there are some signs or characteristics that make it similar to the mother? This section of Gemara will feature sugei leida, different births. Shavlad, eno dome li'aim, doesn't resemble the mother, dome b'miktsas simanim, or it resembles partially. With the double underlining that you see in the Gemara, we've emphasized the different examples. So if you skim down the page, you'll see para shiolda min chamor, chamor shiolda min sus, para shiolda min sus, as the example cited. So now let's turn to the Gemara and continue. We ought to point out before actually reading the Gemara that we're about to embark on what we call a long question. The shin that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara, and then there's some numbers indicating the different parts to the question, but all in all, it lasts quite a few lines, all the lines opposite this vertical dash-dotted line. The Gemara, after this long question, then, has diamonds. These are attempts to answer, to resolve some of the examples that we raise. So, Ibaya Laho, the Gemara asks, Para shiolda min chamor v'yesh boi miktsas simone mahu, a cow that gave birth to an offspring that looks like a donkey, but there are some cow characteristics. What is the din? What is the halacha? The question itself is broken into two parts, and we call this aleph, and then if you skim down a number of lines, you'll see a squiggle underlined expression oi dilma, or possibly beis. So this is a very standard form of question, possibility aleph or possibility beis. So do we say as follows, eis shiolda min rochel v'rochel shiolda min eis, when a goat gives birth to what looks like a sheep, or the other way around. In such a case, we say that when there are some characteristics in the offspring making it resemble the mother, we say there is a bechor obligation. Both sides of the equation, meaning the mother and offspring, are both kosher variety animals. Ha kedushas haguf. Both goat and sheep are animals that when they have sanctity, they have inherent sanctity, as opposed to a donkey which has only monetary sanctity. Hocha, deha temea v'ha tahora. But in our case, where the donkey is an unkosher variety, the mother, the cow, being kosher, tahora, kosher variety, ha kedushas haguf v'ha kedushas damim, the cow has inherent kedusha, the donkey would have monetary kedusha. Lo, then we would not say that miksas simonim, partial characteristics, is enough to enable it to have to have kedushas bechor, or possibly kevon deidi veidi, both cow and donkey bnei mikdash bevechora, they both have a connection to firstborn holiness, kadosh. Well, then we would concede that there is sanctity in our case where the para yolda min chamor and their miksa simonim. Now v'im tim salomar, if you say kevon de'idi v'idi mikdash b'v'chora kadosh, you might adopt this second side of the evaluation and want to say that, all right, since both of them have a b'chora connection, so there is sanctity in this min chamor that came from a para with miksa simonim. What about this case? This is number two. Chamor shiolda min sus mahu. Donkey gives birth to what looks like a horse. Hocha vadai lo bas mikdash bevechora hu. This offspring, the horse-looking thing, if it were a real horse, it would be something totally excluded from Bechorah. Odilma, or possibly Kevon de Min Temeahu Kadosh, since it is also a unkosher-bride animal. In other words, there's a similarity in this sense that the mother and offspring have an unkosher variety status to them. And therefore, it's not considered such a totally different thing from the mother, and coupled with miksas simonim of the mother, where the offspring has some characteristics of the mother, that would bring it into the realm of a bechor, of kedushas bechor. Im tinsilomar kevon de min tameahu kadosh. Now, if you take this side of the analysis by saying, since it has, since both of them are tameah, so therefore there is kedushas bechor. In other words, that the mother and offspring are considered in the same ballpark. What about this case? Poro shiyoda min sus mahu. A cow gives birth to a horse-looking offspring where it has some simonim of the mother. What would you say then? Hocha vadai, here certainly no, there won't be kedushas bechor because ha torah v'ha tameah. Ha bas mikdash b'vechorah v'ha lo bas mikdash b'vechorah. The mother and offspring are so different. The mother is a kosher variety. The offspring, horse-looking, is would be considered unkosher variety. The mother is bas mikdash b'vechorah. The cow is something that has a connection to the realm of firstborn sanctity. A horse has no connection to that realm. Oy dilma, or do we say simanim milsahi, the fact that the offspring, horse-looking offspring, has some mother characteristics, that is enough. Milsi means it's significant. It's significant enough to make it have a kedushas bechor status. That is the end of the long question. In the course of this question, we saw three different examples, all cases featuring an offspring that has some characteristics similar to the mother, but it should be emphasized that in each mother case here, the first was a para, the second case was a chamor, and the third case once again was a para. The mother aspect has a bechor connection because of their nature. What about the offsprings in these cases? Toshma. So the Gemara brings a Tanaic source in an attempt to resolve the issue. This we indicated under our Mivneh heading in the outside margin, where you see a diamond featured, and we have written Nisyonos Lifshoit Kama Mimikrim Hanal, attempts to resolve or conclude some of the cases alluded to before. So here we go in the Gemara Toshma. We quote this Tanaic source. The identity of a Tanaic source in Gemara markings are those sections that appear in frames. So here in our source it says Behemot Torah Shiolda Min Behemot Tamea Ptura Min HaBechora. Kosher variety mother gives birth to what looks like an unkosher variety offspring. It's of course a freak. There is a Bechora exemption. Im Yesh Bo Mixa Simonim Chayeves BeBechora. If there are some signs in the offspring that resemble the mother, then there is a bechor obligation. My love, what does this include? Afilu, even the most extreme of our examples above, does it not include even parosh yolda min sus, namely the third example, which we can say had the least likelihood of being considered bechora, but from this source we would conclude that even that case has kedushas bechora. Lo, the Gemara says, that's not what we should conclude, but rather poro shiolda min chamor. As far as this source is concerned, when it refers to a behemoth tahora that gave birth, that would be the poro, and it gave birth to a min behemoth tamea, that would be a reference to its giving birth to something that looks donkey-like. That really was the simplest of the cases to resolve. And as far as that's concerned, so we say that in that case, if they're mixa simonim and the chamor, that it has mixa simonim of the mother, the parah, then it would have kedushas bechora. Ta shma. We cite another case. Para shiyolda min chamor. The chamor shiyolda min sus. Now, these cases we saw referred to above. The first case was Parashel de Min Chamor, And the second case was Chamor Shiyoda Min Sus. So those two cases are featured right here. Pturim in a Bechora. V'im yesh boi miksa simonim chayeves b'vechora. And if there are partial signs, so then there is an obligation of Bechora. My lav atravayu. Is it not so that this last phrase that indicates that if there are some partial signs of the mother in the offspring, then there would be a Bechor obligation? So could we not resolve two of our three questions above, namely cases 1 and 2, from this source? The Gemara says, no, loy, apor shiolda min chamor. This, the last clause, the final clause of this source that says, if there are partial signs, there will be a Bechor obligation, that's going only on case 1, namely the simplest case. Avol chamor shiolda min sus, but the second case, what about that? So at this point, let us just say we thought that we could have resolved cases 1 and 2. The Gemara had just rejected that and says that as far as resolving case 2, that far we're not going to go. And rather, the closing phrase of this source that said, is going only on case 1. So now, why was case 2 taught in this source? Avol, and we're about to start a long question. You can see that we've indicated this with a long question mark at the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, the kuf that you see encircled with the descending vertical dashed line. So the Gemara asks, so then, why was case 2 featured in this source, if not to tell me about the chiyuv b'chorah? So, Avol Chamor Shiolda Min Sus Lemai Kotani La Liftura. Is it here to tell me that if there are no Miksa Simonim, namely, you have got a Chamor, case 2, a donkey that gave birth to a horse looking offspring, and this horse looking offspring has no Chamor characteristics to it, and therefore the source would be telling me it's exempt from Bechora? Well, do I really need to be taught that? Pshita! That's obvious. Hashtu ma pora shiolda min chamor. The case number 1, the edividi b'nei mikdash b'vachora ninu, where both mother and offspring are varieties of animals that have a b'chora connection. Amris, and you say regarding that, im yesh bo miksa simonim in v'lo lo, only if the offspring has partial sign or appearance of mother, is there a b'chor obligation, and if not. Now we've dashed underlined this v'i loy loy, because we're focusing on the exemption aspect of things. So if it's true that case 1 is exempt, then case 2 would not have to be taught. Chamor shiolda min sus mibaya, the case of a donkey giving birth to a horse looking offspring with no mother donkey characteristics, do I need to be told that it will be exempt? Of course I don't need to be told that. It would be obvious. So the question is, if case 2 is being taught, and it's not to tell me that miksa simonim would be mechayavit, so what's it here for? The Gemara says, itzterich. I need this case of chamor shiolda min sus, the number 2 case, for exemption purposes. Why? Saka deitach, I would have thought, hosam hu, in the case of the pora shiolda min chamor, that namely in the case 1 there is exemption. There, exemption would have been actually more obvious. Hosam hu, di yesh lo karnayim v'ho ein lo karnayim. In the case of Por Shildim and Chamor, the cow has horns, the donkey has no horns. Hor Parsises Dukois, Hor Parsises Klutos. The cow, the mother, has split hooves. The offspring has closed hooves. Well, there, I can understand that there is a Bechor exemption, being that the offspring is so different from the mother. Avol Hocha, but case 2, the Chamor Shildim and Sus, as opposed to what we thought earlier, that was so obvious. Not so. It's not so obvious that there's an exemption. Why? The EDVED ain't lo karnayim. The mother and offspring are actually quite similar. They both do not have horns, nor donkey, nor horse. the EED, VED, both of them, Parsoi Seho Klutos, have closed hooves. Amo, I would have thought that this birth of the Chamor giving birth to the what is a horse-looking thing, I would have thought Chamor Odoim Ba'almahu, it's a reddish-looking donkey. Apparently this offspring had a reddish look to it. So I would have thought it's a reddish donkey. And as such, it would be Chayav in Pet Chamor. After all, the mother gave birth to this reddish-looking offspring that we're thinking maybe should be classified as a reddish donkey. Komash Malon, the source tells me that Stam Susam, that your average horse has this reddish look to it, and therefore it really is a Min Sus. And as a result of that, the source is clarifying, is machadish to us, that if it has no mother appearance to it, it's exempt from Bechorah. Once again, even though there was room to think that maybe this offspring was called a Chamor Odoim, and hence it would be like the mother, the Chiddush is no. The standard horse has this reddish look to it. Umahein Ba'achila, and the Mishnah discussed the issue of what about eating such things like that where a Parah gives birth to a non-kosher variety looking offspring. So in our Mishnah we saw specific examples, and the Mishnah then also stated a rule, and it said Shayotze min ha'osur osur. The Gemara asks, Loma li lemisni shayotze, what do I need that concluding phrase in the Mishnah for? In other words, from the examples themselves where I tell you that a parah gave birth to a min chamor, something like that would be acceptable to eat, and a chamor that gave birth to a min para, that would be unacceptable. On my own, I could see the idea, a rule formed over there. The Mishnah itself on Hey Omid Beis had spelled out Behemot Torah Shiolda Kamin Behemot Tameya Mutar Bachila, and the opposite as well, Tameya Shiolda Kamin Behemot Torah Osir Bachila. So from that, I figure the rule on my own. Why does the Mishnah have to go on to say, Shayotze min ha-tomei tomei vayotze min ha-tor tor? The Gemara answers. Let's actually read the Gemara now inside. Loma li lemisni shehayotze. Why does the Mishnah have to tell me that final clause, Shayotze min ha-oz min ha, the exact lashon of the Mishnah on Hey, on Daf Hey Omid Beis, was Shayotze min ha-tomei tomei vayotze min ha-tor tor. Why do I need that to be spelled out when I could have figured that out from that which was cited earlier in the Mishnah? Answer, Simona be'almahu. It helps as a memory device. The lo tachlif loch, that things shouldn't get switched around in your mind. In other words, if I had not included that phrase, that nice, the phrase with this nice ring to it, shayotze min ha-tomei tomei yotze min ha-tor tor, if I would have left you with the section just before that in the Mishnah that said be'imot torah shiolda kamin be'imot tameya, it's true the Mishnah says it's mutar b'achila, but I could have easily got confused and thought that the mutar b'achila is going on the other case, the case of behema tamea shiolda min behema tahora. Now, what would be the basis of that confusion? So the Gemara explains the lo tema, that you shouldn't come to say zil bosur di day v'hai tor ma'al yehu v'hai tomei ma'al yehu, that one should emphasize the di day means in this case the offspring, so that. And in the offspring, if it's the case of a tohar giving birth to a tomei-looking creature, I would forbid that because I emphasize the outcome. And likewise a tomei that gives birth to a tohar, I would allow that because I would emphasize the outcome. So, therefore, the Mishnah adds the shehayotze min ha-tomei tomei to help me remember elozil boser imei, to follow the mother, follow the source. The Yotze min hatame, emphasis on the source, tame. Yotze min hatar, emphasis again on the source, the mother, is tohar. Mino hanimili detonor abonon. Before continuing in the Gemara, we can see the Gemara is looking for sources. The comment we have under our topic heading, the nosei, in the outside margin, we've written pora shiolda min tame im mutter bachila, a kosher variety mother, like for example a cow gives birth to an unkosher looking variety offspring. Is such a thing mutter to eat? Our Mishnah addressed this issue, and here we are going to be looking for sources in the Pasuk. The source begins, Ach eze lo sochlu, mimale hagera umimafrise haparsa. So the Pasuk in Sefer Vayikra, in Parsha Shmini, Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Dalit, says that these things you shall not eat, and it says, don't eat from these that are male gera and mafrise parsa. Literally, the male gera has to do with chewing of its cud, and mafrise parsa, split hoofs. The Brisa explains, Yesh lecha shu male gera umafris parsa, viata ochlo. There are examples. There's an example of something that chews its cud and has a split hoof, and you cannot eat it. V'yeh zeh tor shenolad min hatame. That is a case of a kosher variety type offspring that is born from an unkosher variety type mother. So that you have a situation where we said the pasuk says there are examples of a maligera and mafris parsa that you cannot eat. How could such a thing come to be? So it's a situation of a freak birth, where an unkosher variety mother bore a kosher looking offspring, and we say kosher looking, it had all the characteristics of a kosher animal. It was maligera and mafris parsa. So that's what this pasuk is telling me. Eino ella, or possibly the purpose of the pasuk is tome hanolad min hatohar. Maybe that is what is forbidden. Umay mimale agerim frisi parsa. So, and how will you explain the pasuk itself if you say that the Torah is coming to aser a tome, an unkosher variety born from a kosher variety mother? So, hachi ko'omar, this is the intent of the pasuk. So here the Brisa will read on as it wants you to understand the pasuk. Dovar habo mi male hagera mafise parsa lo sechol. Maybe that's how to understand the pasuk, that when it says in Vayikra Yud Aleph, pasuk Dalit, it says, Ach ezeh lo sechlu mi male hagera mafise parsa, it's a reference to something that comes from a kosher variety mother. If its offspring looks like an unkosher variety animal, you will not be allowed to eat it. Maybe that's the intent. Talmud Lomar, Gomol Tomei Hu. Hu Tomei, that is what is Tomei unkosher. A camel is the example of something unkosher. But the word Hu is a limitation expression. So we're saying that alone, the aim to the exclusion of Tomei Hanolad Minator, Tomei Elotor. The unkosher variety looking offspring that comes from a kosher variety mother is not considered tome. It's not considered unacceptable, elator, but it is acceptable. So according to this, a cow that gives birth to a camel looking offspring, the Tanakhama says, as far as eating is concerned, you will be allowed to eat it. Rabbi Shimon Omer. Rabbi Shimon disagrees. Gomol gomol shnei pa'amim. The Torah prohibits the eating of a camel in two places. One in Sefer Vayikra and Parshas Shmini, and the other in Sefer Dvorim and Parshas Re'eh. So the double prohibition concerning camel consumption. Echad gomol hanolad min agamla. One is the obvious case of a camel born from a mother camel. The echod gomel hanolad min hapora. The other is the case of the camel-looking offspring born from a cow. That would be the case of a tome hanolad min hator. Reb Shimon then is saying that the case of tome hanolad min hator, in fact, is forbidden, and which is at odds or different than the approach taken by the Tanakama. V'rabbonan hai gomel gomel mai ovid lei. What do the Rabbonan do with the source of Rabbi Shimon? What do they do with the double prohibition of gomel? Answer. Chad le'esor atzmo, v'chad le'esor chalovo. One is coming to the prohibit the camel itself, and one is coming to prohibit the milk, camel milk. Rabbi Shimon le'esor chalovo min ole. Rabbi Shimon, who we saw, used gomel gomel for another purpose, to include a tome hanolad min haTorah as being forbidden. Where does he learn the prohibition of camel milk? Nafkale me es hagamol. From the fact that the posuk uses the expression es, the S comes to include something in addition to the camel itself, they hence include the milk as being prohibited. The Rabbonon, Esim lo dorash. The Rabbonon, who needed the extra gomel citation to serve as a source for milk prohibition, they won't use the word S because they don't darshan the word S to include. Kedisanya. We bring now a Tanaic source in which you see a Tana that decided not to darshan the word S. Here is a source that is rather well known to many people who learn Gemara. Shimon HaMsuni Hoyadorish Kol S V'S Shibatura. Shimon HaMsuni had a way of expounding on the appearance of the word S, all the word S's in the Torah. Kevon Shigia Les Hashem Lekechotira Piresh. When he got to this pasuk that says that one shall fear the Almighty, and it says S, so he stopped his darshaning. As we indicated, the word S was used to include other things, but when he comes to this, he says, how can something else be included along with fearing the Almighty? There is nothing else. Judaism is founded on this whole principle that there is a one and only almighty deity and nothing else. There's nothing to include. Omru lo tamidav. So when the Talmidim heard Shimon HaMsuni say, I'm not darshaning this S, so they asked him, Rebbe, kol esen shebedarashtem atelem, what is to be with regard to all the other S's that you darshaned? In other words, it seems, if we can use in figurative speech, that Shimon HaMsuni had been using a certain formula for darshaning S, coming to all kinds of conclusions. When he tried to apply his formula to this pasuk es Hashem lekecha tirah, it just didn't work. So we see that the formula is faulty. So the Talmidim ask him, so what's going to be with all the other drushes that you derive from the word es wherever it appears? Amar lahem, so he was very honest and said, kishem shekibati schar al adrisha, just like I received reward for the efforts I expended to explain the S's in all other places. Kachani mekabel schal al aprisha. Don't worry, I will deserve merit and reward for desisting as well. Ad shebo Rabbi Kiva v'limed, until Rabbi Kiva came along and he dealt with this very pasuk that was served as a block to Shimon HaMsuni. He said, Es Hashem Elokecha Tiro, says Rabbi Akiva, L'rabois Talmidei Chachomim, that one has to show respect and fear of Talmudic Torah sages, and in that he is fulfilling this mitzvah of Es Hashem Elokecha Tiro. So Es is L'rabois Talmidei Chachomim. So we saw just before that the Rabbonin did not darshan S, we saw Shimon HaMsuni himself that backed off of darshaning S. So that it's a a legitimate stance to say that I don't see something special in the word S. Hence, the Rabbanan won't use S to include that S serves as a source to forbid camel milk. As we continue in the Gemara, we encounter a long question marking. This you can see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, a kuf that's encircled with a vertical dashed line. Before learning the Gemara itself, let's glance at the side where we have something called a tat nosei. It's a type of subtopic. In other words, we're continuing in our general discussion. However, we have written here on the side, Loma li mekuros noisofim kamo gomol gomol rabbanon v'esha gomol reb shimon lumod iser cholov tamea. Why do I need these extra sources, each one respectively and their source? Loma lo nil medenu me hatmeim dechtiv etzel shrotzim. The Torah says hatmeim in the case of crawling creatures, and from that we know that things that come forth from them are also forbidden. So just like hatmeim, we see that which comes forth from these forbidden creatures is also forbidden. So the milk which comes forth from a camel should be treated the same way. Being that the case, that we already have a source for this, what do I need these additional sources that the Rabbanan and Rabbi Shimon made reference to serve as a source for the milk prohibition? Let's now read the question inside. Omar le Rav Acha Brei Derava le Rav Ashi. Elo me'ata. Taimo de Rabbonon mi gomol gomol, Reb Shimon mi es hagomol. Up till now, then, we have been saying that the reason that the camel milk is usur is because you have either the double camel prohibition, according to Rabbonon, or es hagomol, the word es darshaned as Reb Shimon saw it. Ha lav hochi, and if not for that, if not for those sources, have amino cholov de beimot tamei ashori, would I have really thought that camel milk or milk from unkosher variety animals is allowed? Would you really have thought that in the absence of these two sources? My shno meha de sanya, why would camel milk be different, any different than what is taught in the following source? Hatameim. This posik is found by Shrotzim. And from this we learn less or tziron v'roitfon v'kipo shelahen. Not only is the sheretz itself forbidden, but also the brine or gravy or other shredded pieces of it are all forbidden. So just like hatameim includes that which exudes forth from the sheretz, and in other words, in addition to the sheretz itself being prohibited, so to these other exusions. Likewise, I would have extrapolated from this that milk coming from unkosher variety animals is likewise prohibited. Therefore, the question is, what do I need the gomol gomol source or the es hagomol source that Rabbanan and Rav Shimon respectively cited above to serve as a source for milk prohibition? So the Gemara answers itzrich. Before we go further, this triangle, as far as this omid is concerned, is a new marking. And in the outside margin under the mivne heading, we've noted that these are tshuvos lahanal. These are answers to the above mentioned question. The question, once again, being, what do I need additional sources for the purpose of banning camel milk when I could have figured that out from the hatmeim source? Itzrich, I need additional sources. Sanka beta chamina hoyo de behema tahora nami chidishu. Since milk coming from a kosher variety animal is itself a novel idea. In other words, many of us go through life taking for granted that milk is such as cow's milk is an obviously mutter substance. But it's not such an obviously mutter substance. It's a chiddush. It's considered a novel point. The Omar Mar, it has been taught, dam neka v'nasa cholov, a lactating creature produces its milk by virtue of the fact that the blood in its system is converted into milk. That's dam neka v'nasa cholov. And we know that blood itself is something that is forbidden. The kevon de chidushu, and since the whole phenomenon of drinking milk is it being allowed is a novel idea. It's a chidush. It's not obvious at all. The vehemo tamei anami lishteri. Well, once I'm taking something that I would have thought is a forbidden substance, for example, milk. Milk having its roots in blood. Blood converts into milk. So just like blood is a forbidden substance, so too, let us allow milk coming from camels, even though camels themselves are forbidden creatures. But we already have precedent for that which is labeled as milk, that has as its source something that's forbidden, and it yet is allowed. The milk is allowed. So by the same token, let us say milk coming from a behemoth may is also mutter. Komash molon, therefore, I can't rely on the hatmeim source alone. I need additional sources to tell me that camel milk is in fact forbidden. Well, so what have we said? We have said that the extra sources to serve as a basis for the prohibition of camel milk are needed because without that I would have thought that since milk has as its origin blood, and yet the blood being a forbidden substance, yet the milk being allowed, so I would have thought, well then go all the way with that idea. Well, that whole analysis is honicho lemadom adam nekar v'nasa cholov. That is all fine according to the opinion that says that the blood of the lactating creature is converted into milk. But according to another approach that says that a female that bears a child is considered to be in a state of, let's say, limb shock, if you will, and she doesn't gain her basic healthy status until the passage of 24 months. This, we should point out, is the second of two points of analysis of why it is that that which bears a child, the case of a woman who bears a child, so she doesn't go back to her monthly female cycle of seeing blood. According to one opinion, that's a function of her producing milk, that the blood is converted into milk. But there is another opinion that says that the female cycle disappears not because of its blood going into the milk production, but rather because of this, type of physical birth shock, which causes the blood of the female cycle to stop. So, according to this opinion, it's the lack of blood is not a function of the milk, but it's a function of the jolt that the body undergoes through in giving birth. So, my eko lememar, what do I need additional sources for to teach me the prohibition of camel milk? I should have been able to learn the prohibition of cholov from the hatmeim source. I don't have, according to this opinion, I don't have this logic of blood turning into milk, and hence I would have thought it's mutter if not for the extra makoros. Here, according to this second approach, I don't apply that whole logic of blood going into the milk production. Therefore, the milk is basically a standard exusion from something, in the case of camels, of something that is prohibited. So it's no different than the phenomenon described in the source with hatmeim. So couldn't hatmeim have served as a source? What do I need? What I like to call overkill. Additional sources to tell me the same thing. What do I need them for? Itzterich. The Gemara insists I still need the Gomel Gomel source of according to Rabbanan, or Es HaGomel according to Rabbi Shimon, to tell me about camel milk being prohibited. Without those sources, Sakudai Techamina, I would have thought, Hoyo Veleko Midi, the Osi Michai Vishayarach Mona. In general, there is nothing that comes from a living creature that the Torah would allow. For example, if someone goes up to a living cow and rips off its leg, that's something that's prohibited. Something that comes from a living creature is generally understood to be prohibited. V'hai cholov, milk, after all, comes from a living animal. Ki aver minachai, who it's like a limb coming from a living animal. Fishari, and yet, contrary to the rule, milk is allowed. Fihilkoch, and since I see that milk is already an exceptional realm, so let me go all the way and say, afilu vehema tamea lishtari. Since milk is a chiddush, that it's allowed in face of the fact that it appears to be aver minachai, and still it's allowed, so let us allow camel milk as well. Komash malon, therefore I need the extra psukim to tell me that to counter this logic and establish camel milk as being prohibited. Now the Gemara asks the question of all questions, the cholav de behema tahora minola deshari. How do we know that milk of kosher variety animals is in fact allowed? After all, we just saw a svara that would suggest that milk should be considered like aver minachai, a limb ripped off a living creature, and that is quite prohibited. So how do I know, the Gemara asks, that milk from kosher variety animals is allowed? As you can see, marking-wise, a diamond appears. This is featured in the outside margin under our Nosei Mivneh heading. We have indicated a diamond, and we've written Mekoros Leheter Cholov de Behema Torah. Sources, or attempted sources, to establish that milk from a kosher variety animal is allowed. So, if you were to suggest that since the Torah prohibits the cooking of meat and milk together, so we could infer from this that what does the Torah prohibit? Meat together with milk. Sorry, but milk on its own, in other words, without meat, would be allowed. So by virtue of a type of inference from the Torah, I could come to the conclusion that the milk itself, by itself, would be allowed. V'ema, here the Gemara rejects this. I would suggest to the contrary. Cholav l'chudei osir b'achilu mutar b'hano. Cholav, by itself, I could say, in fact, is different than the milk-meat mixture that we cited in the following. That milk itself is prohibited to eat because it's aver minachai. U'mutar b'hano, but you would be able to sell it. Basar b'cholav, the cooking up of meat with milk, b'hano nami osir. The Torah features the prohibition of basar b'cholav in order to tell me that it's osir even to derive benefit from it. Just to go over this last piece of Gemara, the thought was, from the fact that the Torah asers basar b'cholav, I would have concluded that cholav on its own is allowed. Here the Gemara is rejecting that and saying, no, cholav on its own is still prohibited. So what does the Torah gain by teaching the halach of basar b'cholav? To tell me that not only is basar b'chol something that's prohibited to eat, it's also prohibited to derive benefit from it. Ule Rabbi Shimon deshori b'hano, according to Rabbi Shimon, that says basar b'chol is something you are allowed to derive benefit from. Nevertheless, I could still argue that cholav itself is prohibited. Mishkachas lo lemilki al bishuleha, which means that it could very well be that cholav on itself, on its own, is in fact prohibited to consume it, and still I need extra psukim. And the extra psukim will tell me that there will be lashing for the cooking up of milk together with meat. So at this point, we don't have a source that indicates that milk from kosher variety animals itself is mutter. Ela, the Gemara goes on, midagoli rachmona depsua mukdoshim tizbach lo giza boser velo cholov. From the fact that Torah reveals in psukim dealing with psua mukdoshim, these are animals that were set aside as sacrifices but developed a blemish. So we are to we know that we redeem those animals, and the money that's set aside for them becomes sanctified, and they become non-sanctified. And in the context of psula mikdoshim, the pasuk says tizbach v'lo giza. You can slaughter it for eating, but not for shearing. You can't benefit from it any benefit you like. Bosar v'lo cholov. So by the psula mikdoshim, we have the word bosar, which tells me that, but not use the psula mikdoshim for milk purposes. So we can infer from this that there's a milk prohibition regarding the psula mikdoshim, ha dechulin shari, but milk from common animals that are not sanctified, that would be allowed. So here we would have, by drawing this inference, we would have a source for the heter, for the allowance of milk from kosher variety mothers. Well, the ema, I could argue to the contrary and say, dechulin, milk from chulin, standard mundane animals, is also bachila v'shari b'hana. It is also prohibited, but there is an allowance to derive benefit from it. Dekachim b'hana nami osir, milk coming from those animals that had been sanctified, that is in fact even osir to derive any benefit from. But across the boards, we are seeing that milk from chulin animals will be prohibited. So where do I have a source? What's going to be the source that says milk is allowed? Milk from kosher variety mothers. Ela midichtiv, from the following pasuk. It says, v'dei chalev izim lach mechol lechem beisecho v'chaim l'narosecho. So what do we see here? We see chalev izim serves as your food. V'dilma l'schora, maybe this pasuk is to be understood that milk can be dealt with commercially. You can market it, but not necessarily eat it yourself or consume it yourself. So we still don't have a source. Ela midichtiv. The pasuk says, V'es aseres charitzei hacholov. In this pasuk, you see a reference to cholov as being a food item that would be eaten. And so therefore, this would be the source that milk is allowed. The Gemara says, no, it's not conclusive. V'dilma l'schora. Maybe what the pasuk is referring to here in the aseres charitzei hacholov is for you to market them, to sell them and make money from it. The Gemara asks, Atu daka shel mechama l'schora? To suggest this schora answer is difficult because this pasuk of es aseres charitzei hacholov is a pasuk featured in the Tanakh in the context of a battle. And to tell me that the pasuk is referring simply to commercial activities revolving around the aseres charitzei hacholov is a little far-fetched, because after all, this pasuk is featured in a war situation. So this last comment of the Gemara would actually reinstate this pasuk as a source for it being mutter, because to simply relegate the pasuk as a reference to schora would be highly unlikely. After all, the pasuk is talking about a war situation. So during warfare, it's not common to practice schora, commerce. Maybe this can serve as a source. And you'll notice we have little numberings because these are different sources that could be that are acceptable as sources for the heter, the allowance of milk. So number two is the pasuk says Eretz Zavas Cholov Udevash. A description of the land of Israel is the land flowing with milk and honey. Below Desharu, if it weren't so that milk is something that's allowed, so Mishtab Cholon Kro Mishtabeach Lon Kro Bemidi Delochazi, would the Torah praise the land of Israel through something that is not allowed? So from the fact that the Torah describes land of Israel as Eretz Zavas Cholov Udvash, we see that Cholov must be a mutter substance. Otherwise, the Torah wouldn't be praising the land of Israel as flowing with some type of forbidden substance. V'iboyesema mehocha, a third approach that will remain acceptable. The Pasuk says in Yeshaya, Lechu shivru ve'cholu, lechu shivru below kesef, ubelo mechir yayin v'cholav. So the Pasuk makes a reference to go and acquire wine and milk. So you're going to acquire it for consumption. Notice in our Gemara markers we have a semicolon that indicates that what follows is not a direct flow from that which was just mentioned, but rather it's a throwback to Rav Shimon and the Rabbanon that had darshened the double expression of Gomol, the Rabbanon and Rav Shimon having used it for their own purposes. We saw Rav Shimon use it to refer to the case of the exclusion of Bechora, of a Gomol Shenolad Min HaPara, and the Rabbanon used the double Gomol expression to forbid camel milk. But when you look in the Torah, in addition to a camel, there are many other creatures that have that appear twice as twice being told that they are forbidden to eat. What do I need them repeated twice for? Elomeato, shofan arnevas chazir. These are other creatures that are mentioned in Sefer Vayikra and Sefer Dvorim. Why the repetition in those cases? So, lahani hu da'asu, elo lichinitanya. The double expressions there are not coming to teach me that which the Rabbanon and Rav Shimon darshened already from the double gomel. So it can't be that they are coming to teach me that elo lichinitanya, but they are for the following. Loma nishnu bevehema, why is the parsha of prohibited creatures from Parsha Shmini repeated in Sefer Dvorim? Answer, mipnei hashisua, because the Torah in Sefer Dvorim features the prohibition concerning a shisua, which is not mentioned at all in Sefer Vayikra. So since there was a surprise in Sefer Dvorim, a new restriction that gave license to repeat the entire list as well. Uba oifois, why are birds repeated again in Sefer Dvorim? Mipnei hara'ah, because of the Torah's desire to teach about the raw bird being prohibited. So, gomol gomol nami lahachi hu da'asa. So, with this in mind, that all the other creatures, the shofan, arnevas, chazir, were repeated, because the Torah had this as its agenda. One, to teach me about the shisua, and teach me about the ra'a by the birds. So maybe that's why gomel was repeated. So the double gomel appearance is for this. And that being said, we would not be able to conclude that which we concluded earlier. So the Gemara says, "Kol hecha de'ika le'midrash darshinon," where we have an option of darshining something, as was illustrated before. Reb Shimon Rabbanan had a drosha from Gomel, So we take advantage of that opportunity and say that the double reference to Gomel is for Rav Shimon and the Rabbonon's expansions mentioned earlier. Namely, the Rabbonon had learned the prohibition of camel milk, and Rav Shimon had learned the exclusion from Bechorah, the case of the Pora Shenolda, the Gomel Hanolad Min HaPora. As far as the other examples, the other creatures that are repeated, so we don't have something special to attach or assign to them, so we fall back on this position. They were repeated only because the Torah had taught something new in Sefer Devarim, the Shesua and the Raw in the case of Ophos. So along with the new, the other part of the list was repeated. Tono Rabbanan. Rachel Shiolda Min Eis, V'Eis Shiolda Min Rachel, Ptura Min HaBechora. Sheep gives birth to goat-looking offspring, or goat gives birth to sheep-looking offspring. There's a Bechora exemption. The Imyesh Bo Mixas Simonim Chayavas, if the offspring has some sign similar to the mother, then there will be a Bechor sanctity. Rav Shimon Omer, Ad Shiehe Roishai V'Ruboi Doime Li'imo. Rav Shimon says, like, not so quickly are we going to enable the offspring to be considered Bechora. This will happen only if Roshei V'Rubo, the head, and it's the majority of the offspring look like the mother. So Rav Shimon goes further than the Tanakhama. Tanakhama spoke about just Miksa Simonim is enough to Mechayvet B'Vechora. For Rav Shimon, you have to have more. Ibayalaho la'achila mi boy Rav Shimon roishev ruboy oy loy. Now, Rav Shimon, we know, has an opinion that a, let's say, an unkosher variety animal that is born from a kosher variety animal, since the offspring has this unkosher variety animal characteristic, one is not allowed to eat it. That's as far as Rabbi Shimon is concerned. With regard to Bechora, we see that in order for there to be a Bechora obligation, you would have to have Rosh of Arubo looking like the mother. What about for eating? Is it so that if there's Rosh of Arubo looking like the mother, which is a kosher variety animal, will this offspring be mutter? Olo, or maybe you don't require Rosh of Arubo, but some simonim, some appearances would be enough. So the Gemara goes on analyzing. The question itself is a long question. You'll notice a shin that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, and this dashed vertical line continues to the top line of Zayin Amud Aleph. Before we go any further in the Gemara, let's glance at the topic heading in the outside margin. Birur Shitas Rabbi Shimon. We're going to clarify Shimon's point of view. In Tzorach Roshei V'Ruboi Dumyo Li'imo, do I need the head and robe of its body, the majority of its body, looking like its mother? In the case of Bepora, Shiolda Min Sus. In that case, do I need Rosh Arubo, according to Rabbi Shimon, to be Matir It Ba'achila? The Gemara continues. V'inyan b'chora k'siv ach b'chor shor. Ad shihei hu shor u'b'choro shor. The Torah, maybe with regard to the realm of b'chora, we are insistent on the offspring being similar to the mother, and therefore you would need to have Rosh Ovarubo. Avol la'achila, but with regard to eating of the offspring, gomal hu d'amar rachmana d'asir, only something that is camel-like is prohibited. Ha ishtemimi gomal. However, if it is even slightly different, namely it has mixas simonim of the kosher variety mother, that would be sufficient. Oidilma loishna, or maybe we don't treat the dinim of eating any different than the way we treat treat it with a different standard than bechor. So if by bechor you have to have rosh of rubo, it could be that for eating also. So we see the two sides, the two possibilities are raised. At this point in the Gemara, as you can see, we have triangles that follow. These represent attempts to resolve the issue. And once again, the issue concerns Shitas Rabbi Shimon and a Heter Achila concerning the Pora Shiolda Min Gomol. What happens with regard to that offspring that has this camel look to it? Now, if it had a total camel look to it, Rabbi Shimon would say it's forbidden to eat. But is it enough if it has mixasimon, just some signs making it look like the mother, the kosher variety mother, or do you need to have rosh of rubo as well? So, answer number one, toshma, behema tahora, shiolda min behema tamea, osur bachila. V'im doime rosh of rubo limo, chayov bevachora. So, shma mino, we can conclude from here, Malchilonami boy Rabbi Shimon Rosh Avarubo. Rabbi Shimon would require Rosh Avarubo for eating purposes as well. As you can see, in the source itself we dashed underline Rosh Avarubo. The Gemara says, lo, that's not what the source is saying. Lebechora dafka. When the source says Imdoima Rosh Avarubo Liimo, you need Rosh Avarubo only for Bechorah, to create a Bechor obligation, a Bechor sanctity, firstborn sanctity. However, for Achila, you don't need to have Rosh of Arubo. It's enough it has Mixas Simonim that are like the mother. Daiko Anami, by careful reading, you can see that was the agenda of this particular source. Dekoshavka L'Achila V'kom Le'a Bechor. This source at the beginning spoke about achila. It said if it's a behemot or sheldim in behemot tamei asur b'achila, and it's at that point it then went on to talk about bechora, so that when the source mentions rosh ro in that context, it speaks about bechora. So the Gemara says that by the fact that it dropped the issue of achila and focused on bechora, Shma mino lebechora hu deboy Reb Shimon Rosh Rubo, aval achila lo. From here we see that Reb Shimon's requirement of Rosh Rubo is only for Bechor sanctity and not necessary with regard to a heter achila. It's enough if the offspring has some characteristics making it look like the mother. Le'olam, the Gemara at this point rejects the rejection and says, Le'olam eimaloch l'achila nami boy. Really, Reb Shimon will require Rosh Avrubo to enable the offspring in this case to be eaten. The case, of course, of a Behemot Torah Shiolda Min Behemot Tameah. If that be the case, so if Rosh Avrubo is necessary for Achila, why in the source was the emphasis placed on Bechora? U'Bechora Itzrich. And I need to be specifically taught that Rosh Avrubo is necessary for Bechora. Why do I need especially to be taught about Bechora? Sa'ka daita chamina. Without this source, I would have thought, Hoyoluk siv ach Bechor shor, ad shie hu shor Bechoro shor, felo tizgile Berosh Rubo adiko kule. I might have thought from this pasuk that says ach Bechor shor, I would have thought until the offspring is just like the parent. And Rosh Rubo would not even be enough. Komash Malon, that's why this source has to tell me that Rosh Avarubo is enough. in the case of a tahora shiolda min beima tamea, as long as the tamea, the vlad that looks like the tamea has rosh of ruba looking like the kosh variety mother, there will be a chiyuv b'chora. The Gemara, as you can see, continues quite a bit down this omid with triangles indicating that this discussion continues quite a bit further. But with this, we conclude our shiur for today.